beacon of metta. It's very beautiful. I just heard an airplane. I thought, oh, we've blessed those people already, right? So we've practiced today in many, many different ways. I started talking about metta and the art of training the heart and mind, and we did the appreciation of your own wholesome qualities. We did a practice of forgiveness. We did the practice of imagining those who wish well for you around you as a way to connect with the sense of metta. And then receiving that and then wishing well out from there. We did a practice of wishing well for yourself through connection to the physical body and different parts of the body. We did metta visualization, so the fountain, or you can do the garden, and you know, something like that, without so many words, but just imagining with images. We did this directional metta, and then we did the walking meditation with metta for yourself, with metta for one other being, and then with metta in all the different directions. So if you picked even just one of these practices and did it, that would be really time well spent. So you don't need to definitely go through any big complicated thing like doing all of them. And hopefully at least one of them seemed like one that you could connect with or resonate with. I'll say that also the connection or resonation means just that there's enough interest in it. It doesn't mean that you had giant explosions of metta when you did it, really. So any of the practices are good ones for cultivating that sense of well-wishing. And some people had asked in the group earlier, how do you bring this into your daily practice, daily life, or meditation practice? So I'll just review a little for those who were not in that group, that you can do metta in the beginning of your regular meditation sitting, or also at the end. So you can do a brief period, 5 or 10 minutes, if you have half-hour sitting in the beginning, or you could choose to do a brief period right at the end of it. Also very beneficial is to do metta in your daily life. So I mentioned doing metta on like public transport, so wishing well for people on the bus or airplane. Airplane is not public transport, but you know. on the airplane is a really good one to do, because otherwise you don't maybe think about all these people, but here you are on this journey together, you know, doing this crazy thing, lifting into the sky, and you know, why not wish well for all of us? You know. You could do metta in the grocery line, or imagine if you went to the DMV and did metta there. What a beautiful thing that would be, right? In fact, we'd hire people to go to the DMV and do metta. It should be like a state service to have metta done there, right? So many opportunities. You know, you could even think if you're in some big meeting, you know, if you're in some meeting at work that you're otherwise like slightly bored by, and you start to check out and, you know, plan your weekend or something, and, you know, like you could just relay it and be like, okay, if I'm going to be not paying attention to the content of the meeting, what if I actually spent that time to wish well for people in the meeting? You know, then see how that transforms your relationship to the people there, to what's going on. You know, something like that. So be very creative with this practice. You can be creative with it, and when and how you choose to practice. You can look for many different opportunities. Even, you know, stuck in traffic, right? Where sometimes we have this sense of being oppressed or being obstructed or something. It's like, oh, what if I wished well for those in the cars around me who are also stuck and feeling oppressed? You know. So I saw this great billboard that it says, like you are not stuck in traffic, you are traffic. You know? So that's that shift of viewpoint from, you know, the very limited, you know, like, I'm the star of the show and everything else is there to suit me, or is like bit players in my, you know, the drama of my life, to like recognizing there are all these different people and beings and life forms, and everyone wants to be happy, and Everyone's like struggling with this and that, you know. So whenever you can shift that perspective is really helpful, and metta really helps to shift that. You know, metta helps you to get out of that limited self view that otherwise is really primarily the way that most people go about their lives. So we will have time tomorrow for practicing some of the other complementary practices of doing compassion and doing joy. And I know a number of people can't come tomorrow, which is okay. We'll also have time tomorrow for some small groups for questions about the practice and so on too. But I'll keep a little bit of time if people who weren't in that other small group have questions about any of the techniques that they've practiced today or what happened in your practice, particularly with these last ones that we did this afternoon. So directional metta or visualization. Yeah.
Practices today. What do you recommend in terms of, I don't know if I could tell if one was better than the other. I think it's so new that
yeah.
You just recommend sort of trying different ones.
Do you know, have you done meditation like the basic vipassana, like connection to the breath kind of? Yeah. Okay. I'd say keep it simple then. So if you just do the one that's like taking a few phrases and wishing well for yourself, you know, in the beginning of a meditation sitting, and do that like a couple of rounds of that, you know, and then allow your attention to connect with the sense of being present, with the breath, with the body. Stay with that. If you notice the attention going to thinking, know that that's what's happened. You could label that as thinking, planning, whatever. If you hear sounds, know that, come back. So that's it, that's good. And then you can go to Sims and get more instruction. But I think just, yeah, okay. I think just start with that as simple, you know, just keep it simple. Like, don't need to do anything too fancy like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I noticed I was practicing for my son, practicing metta toward my son. Mm. And it was clear that I was invested in his in his well-being, and so I focused a little bit on the ease part of it, and likewise I have a sick friend right now, and I noticed that when I practice for people who metta for whom I'm invested in their well-being, and it may or may not go that way. Difficult.
Yeah.
So, wondering what you would say about that.
Yeah, it's true. And one of the interesting things about the practice, I think, is that it does bring up and like show us, you know, and here's the connection also with awareness practice, like it kind of highlights the different aspects of relationship that we have. You know, and with kids, it's very common, especially for parents. It's like, you love them, but you also feel some responsibility of like guiding them, or you know, you're attached to them in some way. That's different than the way that like grandparents often feel towards them, or aunts and uncles. You know, they can in some ways like have a less complicated relationship or something. You know, just like, which is why grandparents are so happy to have grandchildren usually, because they're like, it's not really all my problem anymore. But I can just love them, and then you know, you have to discipline them or deal with them. So just recognize that, because it is a helpful place to see, you know, like what's happening in that. And, you know, I mentioned that there's metta, and then tomorrow, primarily tomorrow, we'll work with joy and compassion, really, which are two of the other pranavaras. But, you know, also there's the one of equanimity. So that's a really helpful one, I think, to balance that. You know, particularly with kids, it's like recognizing basically like all beings are on their own path, their own journey. And with kids, it's like you love them, and you raise them, and you feed them, and you guide them, and then they're going to make their own decisions, right? Like, even from a very young age, like, you can't totally control them, even when you want to, and you can see them doing something, like, you don't want them to do. So when you struggle with that, then it causes you strain and suffering, but then also usually it causes the kids strain and suffering, So that can cause like a more contention in the relationship, right? And it's very like natural that that happens for parents, I think, because you do feel this responsibility, like you want them to be happy, but I know that that means you should do this instead of that, right? Or something like that, you know? And sometimes you're right, but then sometimes they still have to figure it out themselves. And then it's painful to watch that too, because like you want to save them from that pain, but sometimes it helps to reflect on like ourselves as kids, you know, and like how we had to make our decisions, and you know, maybe sometimes like your parents are try to tell you to do something or not something, but then you have to kind of make your own way too, you know. So that's part of the pain also of the world and like samsara, is that like we do make our own decisions and you do the best you can to sort of give input, and but then it's not in your hands, right? So things are as they are, and people do what they do, and then they reap the results from those decisions, and even children do that too, right? With the other one, you know, with a friend who is sick or something like that, right? Yeah, with someone who's in a state of suffering, then probably like compassion is a helpful thing to cultivate with that, and like we'll talk more about that tomorrow also, because it doesn't feel like it makes sense sometimes to wish someone to be well and healthy and happy when they're already not well, healthy and happy. So then compassion is like a recognition of that and then feeling into that with them. But you've touched on two, you know, different helpful aspects of these practices, these heart practices. So in some ways you could consider like this, there's this configuration of four called the Brahma Viharas, you know, these divine abodes, and metta is the main one. And then, you know, just having a sense of kindness, well-wishing towards other beings. And then when we encounter someone who is suffering, then there's like a slight shading, a shift towards compassion. And then if we meet someone who's already happy, then there's a shading towards a sense of appreciative joy, which we'll cover tomorrow. So being happy at someone else's happiness. And then supporting them all, kind of undergirding them all, is this sense of equanimity, of balance, of understanding that there's what I wish for people, and then that does not control what they do. So it's the more that we're able to know that one, and in some ways I think equanimity is like the most mature of them and the hardest to get. For me, that's always been the case, that it's like there's a lot of spiritual maturity or maturity in general and like being able to hold that. But the more that we can get that, then the more that supports also like a wise relationship to people. And we can notice as we go through, you know, like I was saying, we're sort of mixed bag, so it's like, oh, I have a sense of love towards them, but then you start to notice, like, but don't do that, you know, it's like, that's like the attachment part, like, but don't, and feel the strain of that and how that's shading away from just the pure well-wishing into, like, but I need to control you, but it's for a good reason, because I know, you know, because I know it's right, and, you know, and it could be even true, but it's also that, like, the truth is, like, that is not going to make them do what you want, right? And, like, the more that you act towards them with that attitude, it doesn't actually influence them necessarily. In fact, sometimes it makes them do the opposite, right? Sometimes willfully, right? So, both in terms of the development of your own heart, but even in terms of, like, efficacy of, you know, it's more helpful when there's, you know, that equanimity underlying it, too. But it's all like helpful learning, you know, sort of like we're learning the map, and like as you pay attention, you're like, oh, actually this isn't totally metta, this is like something else, or like, oh, there's a little difficulty, or like, oh, look, when they're suffering, there's this different turning like that. So it's all like good learning, I think, too. Yeah.
It's interesting because I think some of what's difficult about sending metta to my son is the fear that it might not, he may not be well. He's well now.
Yeah.
And that there would be so much pain for me associated with that. And so that's just recognizing that. Okay, well, there is pain, there is suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be a block to sending the good wishes.
Yeah, yeah. But in some ways that the sending the good wishes makes is like, it sounds like points out the fact that it's not in your control. Like, it's not fully in your control whether he is or, you know, what happens in his life and things like that, right? So then you're kind of faced with, that's actually facing the truth. It's actually true, you know? And it's difficult to face, but it's true, right? So that's, like, first noble truth then. It's, like, delivered to you, you know? dukkha. So, you know, when that happens, like the, here's how it all, you know, works together. So then if that's what's coming up, then to face that with awareness, if you can, you know, it's like, oh, okay. Look, this is dukkha. You know, I notice the struggle against it. Like, but I want him to be well, but I want to be able to make things okay for him, but it would be so hard, you know. Notice if the mind starts to spin out too, you know, and it's like, oh, but this could happen or that could happen, right? Come back and, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in that too, even though it's painful, you know, to see like, oh, it's not under my control. And there's the equanimity piece, is that like, you can still wish him well, but it's not like the wishing well isn't going to control it. It's actually more about the attitude of the heart, you know, towards him. And and then when you're suffering a lot with that, then it's also helpful to turn it towards yourself, usually compassion for yourself. You know, it's like, oh, look, like it's hard to be a mom and to want to make things safe for him and not be able to, you know. So then holding yourself with compassion, because there's some good intentions there, right? And then there's also like some like delusion that would be possible. So just holding yourself with kindness that like, there's some part of you that thinks that that's your job and it's possible, you know. And for most, you know, parents often it's there, but it's like, yeah, that's actually impossible. But it's hard to face, right? Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I just have been kind of working with, like, you know, vipassana and mostly metta, and sort of how much is the right amount of each to do on a day-to-day basis? And just kind of experimenting with that, and I find there's a maybe a certain interest in using the vipassana to kind of get at the underlying you know, things that are going on, and so I. Can you just talk about that a little bit? Just, I mean, I guess everyone has to, you were suggesting maybe doing it at the beginning or end. I just kind of alternate days sometimes. But I don't know. It seems like something you've got to just, I guess, use your intuition on how much you need of one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, when you say it, kind of get at things, like underlying things, like what do you mean by that? Like what sort of example of that?
Of understanding what's operating beneath the surface that's causing suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
And versus, you know, what's causing the unwholesome states of mind versus the metta seems like it's practicing the cultivating the wholesome state of mind. So.
Yeah, either way is good, and I think you're right, just to intuit it out. I mean, one of the advantages of doing it in the beginning a little bit is that it helps to maybe, like, fine-tune a little the attitude of mind, you know, towards experience. So in practicing vipassana, it's helpful to have a sense of, you know, this openness and presence, and it's actually like an attitude of metta, of love towards that which arises in our experience. And sometimes there can be a way in which actually our practice is tinged by some like subtle grasping or not so subtle grasping, you know, or leaning away from or towards experience in some way. So beginning with a sense of metta can sometimes help to ground you in more that sense of openness and yeah, kind of like right attitude towards being present too. So that's one statement in favor of doing in the beginning a little bit. But you know, you could check it out and see too. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So it can feel like hard work sometimes doing all these different things and techniques. So. Maybe that's enough that you've had today. So there might be some closing things that have to happen here. there someone from Sims who knows about this? Managers, co-managers.
The only thing I would say is if you're coming tomorrow and you want to leave anything here, just don't leave any valuables. But if you want to leave cushions or anything like that, you're certainly welcome to. We'll lock the door when we leave. So, and I want to thank all the volunteers today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. You want a mic? Need a mic or no mic? Need a mic? No mic. Okay.
And I'd just like to say, for those of you who are leaving today, what a rare opportunity to provide support for our beloved teacher here in Mishka. So please do remember the donut basket on your way out. And when will we ever have that opportunity again? We never know. Hopefully soon and often, but you never know. So you got to go with the opportunity when you get it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
You also have the opportunity to sign up for Anushka's email, the e-newsletter, and there's a sign-up sheet right between the donut baskets.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, the e-newsletter, usually I send out quarterly emails and have information on where I'm teaching and some Dharma articles of interest, things like that. I'm teaching a retreat for LGBTQ folks in end of May, beginning of June at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in California. So any of you who are in the LGBTQ community are welcome to come to that. Love to see you if you still have some spots open there. So it's a nice opportunity to practice in community. So myself and Larry Yang, who's also on the Spirit Rock Teacher Council, and then a teacher from East Coast, Maddie Klein, will be joining us too for that. And then I'm actually teaching a metta retreat, a 9-day metta retreat at Spirit Rock in July. So usually at Spirit Rock, like about 3 times a year, they have all metta, all the time kind of retreat. So, If you feel like, oh, it's so tiring today, I don't know if I could do that. There's a momentum of practice that can start to build. So oftentimes, like, the first day can feel like I'm putting in a lot of work, but then it can start to feel more easeful, too. If you're interested in that, you could check that out. Or I think probably Cloud Mountain also, they have some